George Brockler back with you here. It's hour two of four. 10 o'clock, we get replaced by Charlie Kirk. At 11, Dennis Prager. 1 o'clock, Seb Gorka. Then live and local, Deb Flora, 3 to 4. And get him while you can, Stefan Tubbs, from 4 to 7 p.m. As you know, Stefan has announced he is going to retire sometime within the next 10 years. So get in while you can on some of these last shows. We could be entering the last full month of Stefan's time as a radio host. So if you were ever going to do something to get on Stefan's radar, ask him a question he's never been asked before, typically one about math or anything like that, now's your chance. Listen to that show. Now, we have on with us this morning, she was nice enough to get out of bed or wherever it was she fell asleep last night in time to talk on the phone. It's one of our favorites. It's Sherry Pyfe. Sherry, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, George. Thanks for having me, as always.
Dare we ask where you ended up last night? I know it was a Sunday night, so.
I was at home.
Oh, well, I was, for a minute there, I thought it was going to be, it looks like I'm in a field somewhere, you know, or something like that, which would be awesome.
I'm still okay. I'm at home.
Hey, did you follow at all the events of this past Saturday at the state GOP Central Committee meeting down there at The Rock in Castle Rock?
Oh, I was there all day, voting member and all. Yep, I was there from about
7:30
on.
First, if you don't mind, Sherry, would you please set the stage for what was at stake? We talked a little bit about this last week with the proposed rule change, whatever that was, number 9 or something. But can you set the stage and then tell us what happened while you were there?
Yeah, so what was at stake was the sanity of the Colorado Republican Party, to be honest. There was, obviously, the opt-out vote has been the most talked about thing in the Colorado Republican Party for the last 2 election cycles now. They've tried to put in this rule that allows the Republican Party to opt out of the state primaries and thereby disregarding all of the unaffiliated vote in the state of Colorado. I'm not in favor of the unaffiliated vote in our primaries. I've said that hundreds of times. But that being said, by opting out 2 years ago, they would have disregarded about 900,000 Republican votes from the primary with the way the caucus and assembly system works. This time around, they proposed a couple of different methods, one of which would basically have had the Colorado Republican Party running its own primary. They would have been responsible for 900,000 plus ballots. And every Republican in the state would have been allowed to vote in it, no unaffiliated, but it would have been the Republican Party that would have been managing that. And interestingly enough,
did you see that proposal in detail, Sherry?
I did, yeah. It was actually included with our bylaws.
Did it include, dang it, I wish I'd have had that last week. Did it include the method by which they were going to do that? Because when we had DeWill on, David Williams, the state GOP chair, a couple weeks ago, he'd suggested that one of the ways they would do that is electronic voting.
and that's exactly where I was getting ready to go. I was going to say, and ironic, no, that's okay. No, you're fine. I was going to say, ironically, the very people who wanted this to pass are the same people who have been screaming since the 2020 election that they don't want electronic voting. They don't want to be hooked up to the internet. They want paper ballots. You know, 2 years ago at the state convention, they fought for hundreds and hundreds of people to vote by paper ballot. But this go around, they wanted people to upload your driver's license to the internet so that we can validate it and make sure that we're really voters. And then cast the ballot through the internet, cast the ballot through email. It was an electronic format by the very same people who have been screaming that is room for error. So,
I gotta believe that even that method just begs for some kind of corruption.
it has to. I mean, and how many people want to upload? I mean, I'm going to start with, there's no way I would upload my driver's license to the internet. It's just not going to happen. I mean, who, and you're talking, these are people who are police officers, district attorneys, people who normally and otherwise are what they call confidential voters. who, when you go to, you know, when you go to try to find voters on lists, don't have addresses and phone numbers listed. But now we're going to ask them to upload their driver's license to the internet? Right. Yeah, that's not going to happen. So that was the method by which they were going to do. That's what was going in, we were going into on Saturday, with, because you have to have, if this were to pass, it would only pass for one election cycle. You would have to do this every single election cycle in order for it to pass. So their thought process was, there was only one statewide election in 2024, and that's for CU region at large. So this would be a great year to test it out. But there are 64 county assemblies, and there are 8 congressional district assemblies by which we would have to have nominated all 65 state House seats and about half of the 35 Senate seats and all the county commissioner and clerk and sheriff offices across the state.
So, okay, so this thing shows up. It, one of the things that we saw was that the rule change they proposed was we're now going to count abstentions as going with the majority. Was there any discussion of that?
So, yeah, and it was actually worse than just abstentions. Not only were they going to count any abstentions as going with the majority of the party, there was a rule in there about changing the way proxies were handled. And those proxies, prior to the meeting on Saturday, you could carry as many proxies, or what they call whole votes now, as you wanted. The meeting rules changed that to where you could only carry 3. But you're credentialed in under the old meeting rules, which means you could carry as many as you wanted. So in theory, yeah. So in theory, you could credential in 6 people, 6 whole votes, and meeting rules pass, and you only get to vote 3 of those. So the 3 that didn't get to be voted then became also casted with the majority.
Well, wait a minute. Didn't those 3, though, how did they do that? Those aren't even abstentions.
But they were credentialed. They did that through the meeting rule that said, changed meeting rule 9 as well, also changed the definition of a total voting member.
Okay.
Rather than total membership being all voting members of the GOP, it was all credentialed members at the meeting. So when you credentialed in 6 voting members, but then rule number 25 took away 3 of those from you. But those members were still credentialed in, and meeting rule 9 said all non-casted votes by credentialed members would side with the majority. So, you know, I called the chairman the day I got the meeting rules. I sent him a text message and I said, you need to call me. I need to have a conversation with you. He called me almost immediately, to his credit, and he asked what I needed, and I told him I needed him to stop giving me heartburn. And when we talked about these two rules and how they worked together, his answer to me was, well, let's hope that everybody reads the meeting rules, Sherry.
Who said that?
Dave Williams. When I asked him how he planned to reconcile this, he said, let's hope everybody reads the meeting rules, Sherry. So how they ended up reconciling it was this. They voted, or they credentialed in everybody. Well, first of all, we worked really hard to make sure that everybody knew not to bring more than 2 proxies or have more than 3 votes, period. There were people on the no side that reached out to everybody in all 64 counties and said, please don't bring more than 3 proxies. Because if you bring more than 3 proxies, here's what's going to happen. So I think we got most of the people in the state, because when they were going through a standing vote one time where they actually had to count, it appeared that nobody had more than 3 votes. So I think that worked out for us. But that being said, how they reconciled it was, we all credentialed in, and then these were supposed to be amendments to the state bylaws.
Yeah,
rather than passing the meeting rules, they brought 2 amendments forward first. We voted in the 2 amendments under the old set of rules, which included an amendment changing the proxies, and then they voted in the meeting rules. So they changed the protocol, they changed the order of the way the meeting is ran, and these two amendments that we did prior to voting on meeting rules both passed. Now, I will say we did get an amendment through on the proxies to change it from 3 to 5.
Is so that forever, or is that just for this meeting?
Now it's forever because it was an amendment to the state constitution. So now it's forever unless it's amended at a future point. But, you know, the other one that they did that they had to do prior to the meeting rules because it was in conflict with the state bylaws was they changed the ability to call for a roll call vote. Normally, a roll call vote would take 45 signatures of voting members, and each county divides out into their own little county. The county chairman takes a tally of how people are voting, and then the county chairman's report back to the body, and they tally it up, and that's the vote. Well, state party leadership believes that there were shenanigans doing that at the last meeting. So this amendment said 75 signatures and a true roll call vote. So we're going to call out everybody's name and you're going to yell out your vote. That passed. And I'll be honest with you, I'm fine with that. And I said, I'll vote for that. I don't care. I'm people can know how I vote. But the purpose for that was because it was talked about in an executive committee meeting that most people who were voting no wouldn't go on record because they don't want their constituents to know that they're against the opt-out. So it was
does it get to remain an anonymous vote or do you have to be documented?
Nope, you have to be documented, and that was the other part.
Why would we do that?
Yeah, because at that very same executive meeting, the executive committee instructed Dave Williams that once this meeting was over on Saturday, they were going to, because the yes side was going to call for the roll call vote, because then they wanted Dave Williams to post how people voted on the state GOP website. So that passed, and that's how we voted on the opt-out, was by roll call, one name at a time, yelling out yes or no and documenting who voted how.
Do you think that changed some of the vote? I saw that 65% voted to opt out, which is an epic number given how they had done the last time. What do you attribute that increase to?
I attribute the increase to it's a grassroots movement, and they're doing a good job of getting around to the counties and getting the right bonus members in place and getting the right people in place that want the opt-out movement. I don't think the roll call vote changed anybody's mind. I mean, you had a slew of elected officials who still voted no on it, and I think that's a lot of where some of the pressure was coming from, is to get all of the elected officials to vote yes because, quote unquote, that's what your constituents want. But that's not accurate. I mean, for example, in Weld County, the Weld County vote was 19 no's and 6 yeses, and every single elected official that represented Weld County all voted no because they voted with their county. They voted with their county constituents, and that happened in many places. I don't think that changed the votes. There was a few abstentions. Ironically, the people that abstained were people who have supported the opt-out for a long time. So abstaining was, I don't even know what kind of message they thought they were sending, because people knew that they supported it and their abstention became a yes anyway.
Interesting. What's next then? And by the way, was it contentious at the meeting? Set the stage for us. We're talking with Sherry Pye from Independence Institute Complete Colorado, page 2. Was there a lot of tension there? Was it good natured? Was there a lot of...
No. There was a lot. There was more tension there than I think I've seen in a long time. The meeting was mismanaged. The meeting, the executive board sat on stage during the debate for the opt-out and clapped and cheered and nodded yes and clearly was biased in the way they presented themselves. Anna Ferguson and the new vice chair, Hope Shepelman, were continuously clapping and cheering for the people that supported the opt-out. It was very contentious because it was clear that we had a state board that was biased across the board. When it came time to vote for the meeting rules, everybody knew that the meeting rules were going to be highly debated, and they lined up somebody to get in line almost immediately and call for debate to be canceled before we even had debate. So we weren't even allowed to debate meeting rule 9 because Dave put him on the microphone. I think one guy got one person opposed to the meeting rules got comment in, and Dave immediately let debate be killed. So we didn't get debate on that. There was another amendment that was put forth that will allow state party leaders in the state party, the county parties, and the congressional parties, it'll allow the members of their executive board to endorse candidates prior to the primary. So if you have two Republicans running against each other for a primary seat, leadership can now publicly endorse them.
Candidates?
Yeah. So let's say you have Barbara Kirkmeyer versus Lori Sane for the 8th Congressional District, like last time.
Right.
The amendment allows the 8th Congressional District Board to come out and say, we hereby support Lori Sane.
But based on what?
Based on the fact that Barbara Kirkmeyer petitioned on and didn't go through the process. So we get to that amendment, which requires 2/3 majority, keeping in mind that when there was an amendment to the bylaws, take it from 3 to 5, the chair did not, Dave Williams did not believe that he could tell by a standing vote exactly how many members were going in each direction. So he had a count. He had his teller committee come out on the floor and count us one by one, all the yeses and all the noes. Well, when it got to this amendment, he had already lost the proxy challenge. He had already lost the opt-out. He was clearly frustrated. We go to vote on this amendment. They did not have 2/3 majority, but Dave didn't do the count this time. He just ruled in the favor of the amendment and said, sit down, basically said, sit down and shut up.
No way. Hold on. So you think that Dave looked out there at the crowd having suffered blow after blow and decided this counting thing sucks. I'm just going to declare my side won?
Yeah, that's exactly what I believe.
There's
that's
no appeal from this? There's no one that can point of order call? So
nope,
wait a minute. So what are the new rules? The new rules are now that the party can just on its own, when someone petitions on, support the other assembly candidate?
Yep.
And somebody did
go up to the microphone. Yeah, it's embedded in our bylaws. And somebody did go up to the microphone and say, ask for a point of order and ask for a roll call vote. And Dave said it's too late.
Unbelievable. Why didn't this get any ink? This is the most controversial thing you've told us about this process. It's not the attempt to try to get rid of the unaffiliateds and maybe every other non-assembly attending Republican. I mean, that's predictable. But this thing right here sounds like it is super questionable.
Agreed. 100%. I think most, if I can look back to the media that was there, I think most of them had left at this point because this was toward the very end of the meeting and they were there for the opt-out. And so I don't think they realized what happened.
I got to be honest, if the party is now going to take an inter-primary, partisan, really, approach to this, not only are you going to, it's not going to encourage people to go through the assembly, in my opinion, it will encourage more people to run outside the party and just simply say, well, that's it then. I'm just going to run as an unaffiliated or fill in the blank, and it will scuttle the Republicans' chances of victory. We'll see more Democrats elected over this rule than had he just let it happen the way it's been going historically. I don't get it. I understand not letting petition on candidates speak at the assembly. That makes total sense to me. You don't want to go through the process. You don't get the benefit of the platform. I get that part. But to allow the party to come out and weigh in against another declared Republican, and by the way, when that happens, and let's say that person loses, what kind of unity do you expect when the party has come out against another Republican?
Agreed. There's not going to be unity. And here's the problem. Here's the part of the problem that nobody talks about, that nobody remembers as to why we're at this point in the first place. Candidates have always been allowed to petition on. Always. Okay. This is not something that's new to the state of Colorado or the GOP. However, in the past, and I don't remember when it happened, it was maybe 3-4 election cycles ago. It hasn't been very long, but I'd say maybe at least 3 election cycles ago. It used to be that you would go through the assembly process. You had to go through the assembly process, okay? And once you went through the assembly process, if you did not get the 30% of the assembly that you needed to get on the ballot, on the primary ballot that way, so long as you garnered 10% of the vote, you could then go petition on. And you had a very, 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 very tiny window to be able to do that. Well, at some point, I don't know, 3 or 4 election cycles ago, the county clerks started complaining that that window was so small, it was really hard for them to then get petitions in their office, validate
the count,
and get those names on the ballot. So they switched it so that it was, so that it said, okay, now you can primary, you can petition on prior to the primary, but if you petition on and you decide to go through the caucus assembly and you don't get the 10% at that time, you are no longer on the ballot. You still have to get the 10%. So that has led people who wanted to petition on just in case they didn't get the 10%, that has led them to not go through the assembly process, because now they're risking spending hundreds and hundreds of hours out there collecting signatures. They're risking not making the ballot if they don't get that 10%. So they just don't go through the process. Now, there are people like Barbara Kirkmeyer, who when she ran for Senate District 23, did both anyway. She petitioned on, and this is one of the other big misnomers. Everybody's like, all Barbara Kirkmeyer ever does is petition on. That's not accurate either. When she ran for Senate District 23, she petitioned on, and she ran through the assembly, and she still became top name on the ballot because she still had the most votes at assembly. So there are people that still do it. There are people that don't do it, and they don't do it because of the way the state law has shifted over the last 2 or 3, 4 election cycles.
Well, the calendar change has been what, and I know this as a guy who ran and done it. So you were right back in 2012 when I ran for district attorney. It was exactly how you first described, which is you got to get 10% or you could petition, and there was still time on the clock to do it, even though many people, I mean, listen, in 2012, Sherry, it was actually, 2012, I'd just gotten back from Iraq maybe a year before, and I had started the petition process because I thought, well, I got back too late. There were already 3 Republican candidates in it. I just didn't have a ground game, and I thought, well, I'll just petition on. So I started petitioning. There are 4 different assemblies you want to talk to before you get to the 18th JD one. And the grassroots support was so overwhelming, I abandoned the petition and just ended up going through the assembly and doing it. But when I kept all 3 other Republicans off the ballot at the 18th JD assembly, one of them had gotten just under 30%, like maybe 27%, and she ended up petitioning on, forcing a primary. And I'll tell you, I was super bummed to have to waste time and money doing that primary, but that was just how it worked. Now you can't wait. You can't wait to find out. Like, you have to have done it beforehand, which kind of sucks.
It does. It really does. And that's the problem with the whole, you know, the same thing happened when Hugh McKean ran for his first term in House District 51. They went through the assembly process, and Hugh kept everybody else off the ballot. But Tom Lucero garnered his 10% that he needed to garner at assembly, and he beat a path for the next few days, collecting the signatures he needed to collect, forcing a primary against Hugh McKean in that very first term that Hugh McKean had. And Hugh ended up being, like yourself, victorious in the primary. But yeah, there's many examples of that out there, and all that changed was the calendar. But everybody wants everybody to believe that petitioning on is new to the system, and it's cost us all of these elections over the years. And that's not true.
Sherry, I had not intended to spend the whole segment talking with you about this because I want to talk about your fascinating new column. Do you have time left on your jail-provided phone to stay on and do another segment with us?
Yes, I can.
All right, Sherry, stick around with us. Billy, if you don't mind putting Sherry on hold. I got to quickly get through something, though, here, too. I want to tell you about some hip, knee, other joint pain. And by the way, believe me, I'm feeling it. I don't know what's going on. Like, I've never been a runner, but I've always been able to run. These last couple months of trying to get ready for this ridiculous marathon, at the end of this month, folks, we're less than a month before the Marine Corps marathon, it's my knees. It's the front of my knees when I run. And just the 9 miles I did around Central Park yesterday, I can feel it right now. It'll go away in a day or so, but I want it to go away forever. Thinking hard about there's going to be that time, and you may already be there, when you need to call our friends at QC Kinetics. These folks are the local medical professionals that have figured out a way to fix these kinds of pains with you. No surgery, no gobs and gobs of pills, no downtime with the rehabilitation, and you have to take time out to go do this and have some young person put their hands on you and stretch you around and all that stuff. Nope. This is using you to fix you through regenerative medicine. And all you have to do to get the benefits of that, and I'm close, folks. Well, let's see how I feel at the end of the month. I'm close. 303-900-8986. 303-900-8986. 303-900-8986. You can check them out at QCKinetics.com to begin. That's the letter Q, the letter C, begins with a K, ends with an X, QCKinetics.com. But then call them up and just try to stump them, honestly. Ask every question where you have a concern, and these folks will be able to answer it. That's QCKinetics.com. When we come back, it's going to be you, me, Sherry Pfeiff, and 710 KNUS. Here's 710 KNUS bringing back up our VIP Sherry Pfeiff. I talked her ear off over the stuff that took place at the state level. Man, that's concerning, some of the things that are going on there. But I'm sure there's a rational explanation for it, and we'll get that rational explanation when we can from our buddy Dave Williams when he's back on. In the interim, Sherry Pfeiff, thanks for joining us. You have an article here called Report Finds Denver Public Schools Using Left-Wing Political Litmus Test in Teacher Hiring. What?
Yeah. So there was an organization that put out some open records requests to, I want to say, 60 or 70 school districts across the country. And that included Denver Public Schools in Colorado, as well as I think Jefferson County was the other one that it asked for, and basically asking for their hiring protocols. You know, what do you use when you hire new teachers? What are the things that you put out there on the internet that show what the job is, what the responsibilities are? You know, what kind of education and requirements you need to apply for it, and then once they come in, once they've turned in their resume and they come in for an interview, what are like some of the questions or whatnot that you put forth to them during that interview? And out of all of the different schools that they reached out to for these open records requests, Denver Public Schools and Jefferson County, like I said, were the two in Colorado. Jefferson County, they both submitted their information to the company, or to the National Opportunity Project, which is the group that did this. And Jefferson County's reports came back pretty clean. There was nothing in there that was a red flag. But the stuff that came back for Denver Public Schools was beyond believable.
Really?
I mean, it was, there were things that they put into, so one of the things, like the DPS equity statement. Part of the DPS equity statement reads, we will achieve equity when we dismantle deeply rooted systems of oppression that have historically resulted in inequitable access and distribution of opportunities and resources for those who represent marginalized identities.
Was this drafted by a newly appointed Representative Tim Hernandez? Because that sounds his brand of cuckoo.
It may very well be. And, you know, they use materials. Like in a job posting, there was a statement in one of DPS's job statements or job postings that said, "You will be a good candidate for DPS if you are willing to redistribute resources to our most marginalized students, families, and team members, and lead for racial and educational excellence to work to dismantle systems of oppression and inequity in our community." And it goes on to say that the most sought after candidates are those who demonstrate a willingness to conform. And that is the word that they use in here. Willingness to conform to controversial views on race, identity, and teachers' essential roles and responsibilities in that. There is so much. There were questions that were leading that basically if you – none of the questions had anything to do about students. None of the questions had anything to do about education. None of the questions had anything to do about your ability to teach. Everything in the DPS hiring practice is like if you – and like I said, the word is literally in the documents. Unless you are willing to conform to DPS's beliefs on controversial views, you will not be considered a candidate for a teaching position in Denver Public Schools.
It seems like we need good teachers, but I'll tell you what, this actually must work for Denver because their student performance is off the charts, amazingly Oh, no, wait.
yeah, back up there a little bit, George.
Yeah, it turns out that whatever they're focusing on, it's obviously not the reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's something else because their scores are awful.
Oh, exactly. And that goes back to, you know, we talk about this year's school board elections and how important they are across the state of Colorado. You know, we got one up here in Greeley that is, you got a slate of three teachers union candidates and you got a slate of three strong conservative candidates who are running for three open positions. And Greeley has never in my memory, I mean, we've had situations where we've had slates of candidates before, but it's always been one side or the other. We have never had a situation where we literally have two very partisan slates of candidates. Because this is, you know, same thing. Remedial rate up here in District 6 is over 50%. Level of proficiency is well below 40% in almost every category. And all we want to talk about is equity and inclusion. We have got to start, you know, and Denver Public, and I will be honest, and Greeley was not included in this, but Complete Colorado has dropped some CORA requests on some other school districts in Colorado. Since this group only dropped the CORA requests on Denver and Jefferson, I have dropped some CORA requests for these very same documents on some of the rest of the school districts across Colorado to see if there are other school districts that are aligning with DPS in this.
We're talking with Sherry Pye from Complete Colorado, the Independence Institute. Sherry, what can happen as a result of this? First off, I mean, I got so many questions. One of them is, you've been covering stuff like this for a while. What's the definition of anti-racist?
That is a really good question because I don't even know anymore. I mean, anti-racist, I guess, would be conformity to the teachers union's definition of racism. Because you anymore, and I hate this term, I hate it with a passion, but I don't know what else to call it, is the reverse racism that we're seeing within our communities, where if you don't absolutely 100% denounce white America, you're racist. I mean, I don't
get it. The equity thing, by the way, and I'm not saying anything you don't know or listeners haven't thought of too, but that is, remember, it used to be equality. And what that ended up becoming, they lost the battle, was it ended up becoming about equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. Well, that's not what they want. That's not what the socialists want. The socialists want equality of outcome. And so you change the word to equity. And equity is no longer about the beginning of the process or even the journey. It's where you end up. And everybody has to end up with the exact same things, whether that's through redistribution or limiting other people. That's the definition of equity.
Yeah, and you'll hear, you know, I've heard this in the Greeley election up here by the teacher union candidates is, you know, I believe in a public education. Well, everybody believes in a public education.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know many people that don't believe in a public education. But our Constitution guarantees the right to a free education. It doesn't guarantee the right to a job. It doesn't guarantee the right to a public education that is equal to the outcome of the next door neighbor's child that's the same age. Everybody has to make of that public education what they make of it. You can't force equity when it comes to the outcome of your education, and that's exactly what they want to do. And so, It's, you know, out of every election that we sit here and argue about on your show and all across Colorado and America, every election season, your school board elections are the ones that
matter. That's this November.
That's this November. And they matter most. And people really do, you know, they're supposed to be nonpartisan races, but I've said it forever and I'll say it again. There's not a single public office that is nonpartisan. I don't care what race you're in. We have, you know, our state board of education, the state board that determines everything that your students learn when they go to school, is a partisan election. We elect our state board of education whether they have a D or an R behind them. Our highest secondary educational system in Colorado, this board of CU Regents, is a partisan election. But yet we want to try to pretend that our local school districts need to be nonpartisan. And that's just not so. And people really need to pay attention to who's on their ballots in November in their local school boards.
Well, I love that you cover stories like this, Sherry, because this is the kind of thing I don't think the Post and the Gazette or anybody else are doing work like this at this level. So I appreciate you jumping on stuff like this to talk about it. As always, you can find Sherry's fantastic work at Complete Colorado, page 2. Page 1 just must be the nonsense, because page 2 is where all the good stuff happens. What's page 3?
Thanks, George. We don't have a page 3, but you know, you never know. We might find one someday.
I want to believe it's Caldera's clothing optional page, which nobody ever wants to go to for a lot of reasons.
Oh yeah, let's hope. Yeah. I don't think. Yeah. Anyway, I'll stay away from that one.
Listen, fantastic job. Thanks for updating us on the State Central Committee stuff. Yeah. We couldn't have gotten anything better than that from anybody else. Thank you for doing that, Sherry.
I appreciate it. And you know, as always, that both sides are going to be different from each other. So we all have a different take on how things happen. But yeah, that's
well, stuff. we have the wrong take, and then we have Sherry's take. So Sherry, thank you
That's exactly it.
The good one. That's Sherry Pipe. You can find all of her good work at Complete Colorado, page 2. Check her out at the Independence Institute. We'll have Sherry back on a regular. I just love the stuff that she reports on that no one else does. One other thing before I cut you loose for a quick break here, got to talk about Gay Ribble with Empower Home. Let me tell you why it matters now, especially in the post-Alpine planning era. I've been reading a bunch of articles online, and it's not just about the coming increase in mortgage rates. It's that October is supposed to be the most cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs volatile month of the year for stocks. Yeah, that's a little scary, too, when you think about in terms of financing, how your retirement gets valued by whoever those financial people are. How do you make the money work? Well, listen, Gay Ribble isn't just a realtor. She knows the people in the finance world that can get you into the house. Some realtors just have contacts with finance people out there that do the harder to close down loans and all that other stuff. Gay knows those people. Her team sells faster than others. They sell for more than others, and the volume is ridiculous. They are in the business of building families and making them happy by putting them into the homes that they want to be in. Do this. Pick up the phone and give her a call at 833-301-SOLD, 833-301-SOLD, 833-301-SOLD. Or you can check out gayhasthebuyers.com. Tons of free information on there, because they know that a smart buyer is a better buyer. Gayhasthebuyers.com. G-A-Y-E, gayhasthebuyers.com. When we come back, we'll close out the top there. I got some thoughts on that. If you heard anything, by the way, if you were at the State Central Committee, Joan, give us a call and tell us what your thoughts were. The sketchiest thing I heard was that voice vote declaration that the party can now take up arms against another Republican in a primary. What do you think about that? 303-696-1971. George Brockler, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS. Final minutes of this hour of the show. That'll take us to the halfway point. My thanks to Sherry Pipe, Complete Colorado, page 2. She's just one of those reporters absolutely every community needs to have. She'll take the deep dive on the stuff that the big folks just don't have the bandwidth to cover, or maybe it's the interest to cover. And she does it in a way, I think, that brings forward some issues that end up becoming the bigger boys' story. So I really appreciate Sherry doing that. The blow-by-blow the play-by-play, if you will, of the Saturday Central Committee meeting. That's going to be a topic we want to cover with DeWill when we get him back on the show. Very, very interesting that now the Republican Party will be permitted to take up arms against another Republican in individual primary races. That is not a formula for unity, in my opinion, but I can be persuaded otherwise. Hey, here's something you don't need any persuading on, and that is who to call when you're in trouble. If you get in trouble, and I mean somebody hurts you, and you don't know where to turn, what to do, who's going to pay my bills, how is my life going to get back on track, then you need to call Dan Kaplis. Dan and Babar Wahid, that's his partner of many years now. I think they've been together 16, 17 years since I was there at the firm learning civil law with Dan. These are the guys that go out there and hit home runs for you in a way that make them blow past the Rockies, because this year the Rockies were awful. But every year, Dan Kaplis Law is fantastic. They take righteous cases. They're not just talk. That's what a lot of the other big firms do, the quote-unquote big PI firms. They don't do that. These are the folks that are about performance. Give them a call, 303-770-5551, 303-770-5551. You can check them out at DanKaplisLaw.com. Kaplis is spelled C-A-P-L-I-S-Law.com. Yes, I worked for Dan about, I don't know, 16, 17 years ago, tried cases for Dan. Dude's a winner. Billy, how much time?